Chapter 73. Christmas Day started early for Sean. He and Michael supervised the slaughter of 10 large oxen for the Zulu labour force, then distributed pay and gifts. To each man a khaki shirt and short pants, and for each of their wives a double handful of coloured beads. There was much singing and laughter. Mbijani, risen from his sickbed for the occasion, made a speech of high dramatic content. Unable to prance on his freshly healed legs, yet he shook his spears, postured, and roared his questions at them. "Has he beaten you?"
"Ayebo,"
they hurled the negative back at him.
"Has he fed you?"
"Ebo,"
explosive accent. "Is there gold in your pockets?"
"Yebo."
"Is he our father?"
"He is our father."
All to be construed not to, literally, Sean grinned. Then he stepped forward to accept the large earthen pot of millet beer that Mbijani's senior wife presented to him. It was a matter of honour that this be emptied without removing it from the lips, a feat which Sean and then Michael both accomplished. Then they climbed up into the waiting buggy. Mbijani took the reins, and with Dirk on the seat beside him, drove them down to Ladyburg. After the first flurry of greeting and good wishes, Ruth led Sean into the backyard, followed by everyone else. There stood a large object covered by a tarpaulin, which was ceremoniously removed, and Sean gaped at what Ruth had given him. Its paintwork burnished to a high gloss, metal parts and polished leather upholstery sparkling in the sun, stood a motor vehicle. Stamped in the huge metal wheel hubs, and below the mascot on the radiator, were the words, "Rolls-Royce." Sean had seen these fiendishly beautiful machines in Johannesburg, and now he was overcome by the feeling of unease they had given him then.
"My dear Ruth, I haven't the words to thank you."
He kissed her heartily, to delay the moment when he must approach the monster.
"Do you really like it?"
"Like it? It's the most magnificent thing I've ever seen."
Over her shoulder, Sean noticed with relief that Michael had taken over. As the only engineer present, he was seated behind the wheel and speaking authoritatively to the crowd about him.
"Get in,"
Ruth ordered.
Let me look at it first.
With Ruth on his arm, Sean circled the rolls, never approaching closer than half a dozen paces. The great headlights glared at him malevolently, and Sean averted his eyes. His unease was slowly becoming genuine fear as he realized that he was expected not only to ride in the thing, but to direct its course and speed. Unable to delay longer, he approached and patted the bonnet.
"Hey there," he told it grimly.
"With an unbroken animal, you must establish mastery from the first contact."
"Get in!"
Michael was still in charge, and Sean obeyed, placing Ruth in the middle of the front seat and himself nearest the door. On Ruth's lap, Storm bounded and squealed with excitement. The delay, while Michael consulted the handbook at length, did nothing for Sean's confidence.
"Ruth, don't you think it's wise to leave Storm behind just this first time?"
"Oh, she isn't any trouble,"
Ruth regarded him quizzically, then smiled.
"It's really quite safe, darling."
Despite her assurance, Sean stiffened in terror when the motor finally roared into life. And he held that pose, staring fixedly ahead during the whole of their triumphal progress through the streets of Ladyburg. Citizens and servants boiled from the houses along their route and lined the road to cheer in wonder and delight. At last they were back in Proteus Street, and when Michael stopped outside the cottage, Sean escaped from the vehicle like a man waking from a nightmare. He firmly vetoed the suggestion that the family motor to church on the grounds that it was irreverent and in bad taste. The Reverend Smiley was flattered that Sean remained awake throughout the sermon, and judged by Sean's worried expression that at last he was in fear of his soul. After church, Michael went out to Tunaskral to eat Christmas dinner with his parents, but returned early in the afternoon to begin Sean's instruction. The entire population of Ladyburg turned out to watch Sean and Michael circling the block at a walking pace. By early evening, Michael decided that Sean was ready for a solo circuit, and accordingly he disembarked. Alone at the wheel, sweating nervously, Sean looked at the sea of expectant faces around him and saw Mbijani grinning hugely in the background.
"Mbijani!" he bellowed.
Nkosi, come with me.
And Imbijani's grin dissolved. He backed away a little. It was unnatural that a vehicle should move of its own accord, and Imbijani wanted no part of it.
Nkosi, there is much pain still in my legs.
Among the crowd were many of the Zulu labourers from Lion Kop who had come down from the hills when news of the miracle reached them. Now one of these laughed in such a manner as to cast doubt on Imbijani's courage. Imbijani drew himself to his full height and withered the man with his eyes. Then he stalked proudly to the rolls, sat on the seat beside Sean, and folded his arms across his chest. Sean drew a deep breath and gripped the steering wheel with both hands. His eyes narrowed, and he scowled ahead down the road.
"Clutch in," he muttered to himself. "In gear, brake off, throttle down, clutch out."
The rolls leapt forward so violently that both he and Imbijani were nearly thrown over the back of the seat. 50 yards further on, the machine expired from lack of fuel, a stroke of good fortune because it was unlikely that Sean would have been able to remember the procedure for stopping it. Grey of face and unsteady of limb, Imbijani alighted from the rolls for the last time. He never rode in it again, and secretly Sean envied him his freedom. He was greatly relieved to hear that it would be weeks before more fuel could be sent up from Cape Town.